Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme Seascapes. On the programme, we've something of an island nation theme. Kieran Devaney brings us to meet the kings of Torrey and Coney Island. We'll be talking to Conor O'Byrne, who's planning to sail around the world with Clipper Ventures. In Sligo, descendants of those who emigrated in 1847 from the Palmerston estate are gathering. Alwyn Gill has the latest on our island communities from Inishmore. First this week on Seascapes, to Dingle in County Kerry, where a few weeks ago, Rona Tarrant met up with the oldest living Blasket Islander, Michael Kearney. He told Rona how his hero, Ernest Hemingway, held the belief that being an islander and a writer went hand in hand.
Michael Kearney will be 93 on his next birthday.
Did you ever hear the statement he made? If you want to become a good writer, live on an island.
He hasn't lived there in 77 years, but Mike has become the latest author from the great Blasket Island.
On an island, evidently, your mind functions better when you're looking at the ocean and the birds and the natural thing every day.
He lives in Massachusetts, but returned home to visit the empty island this year.
And I was able to sit down there and reminisce about my days that I used to snared the rabbits there.
Mike was born to a family of 10 children in 1920.
To me, they were saintly people and they did not know it. They hardly had any problem amongst themselves. They had no store on the island. They had no church on the island. They had no doctor on the island.
He had a typical island upbringing, but life on the Blaskets was already declining.
The youth used to go to the mainland. We used to go to dances there. We used to go to the movies in Dingle here. And when you seen how other people used to live, the freedom they had, so we wanted to get out of the place.
Which he did when he was 16. He moved to Dublin to work in a bar.
And I worked from 9 o'clock in the morning till about 10 o'clock at night. And I often thought about the island. I said to myself, I think it would be better to be chasing the rabbits. But anyway, I said, well, I'm here to help my family out. I never forgot my family.
By this stage, his family were one of the few left on the island, but it was his younger brother's death from meningitis that showed how impossible life had become for the islanders.
They established a radio with battery on the island. Unfortunately, the radio was out of order more often than was working.
And it was out of order when his 24-year-old brother died in January 1947.
Without a priest or without a doctor, due to the weather. It was like locking the people up in jail and throwing the key away.
And in the months that followed, he wrote a letter to Eamon de Valera.
To ask him, please, do something for these people. They deserved it. They had helped the movement of the Gaelic language.
The island was finally evacuated 6 years later, and by that stage, Mike had moved to the States, where he got a job as a manager in a supermarket.
I don't know why. I was never in one of them in my life. Never.
He set up a new life with his wife Maureen, whom he married in 1950.
I met her in the teacher's hall in Dublin, asked her for a dance, and we were together for 63 years.
They had four children, and although his wife has passed away, his family often visit the Blaskets.
They are as dedicated about the island as I am, even though they were born in America.
Over the years, Mike campaigned for the preservation of the island, and the Blasket Centre at Dunquin is just one of the outcomes.
I got in touch with a congressman from my area in Springfield, in Washington, and he got in touch with the Prime Minister at the time, Bertie Ahern, to move the Blasket Island forward. And they did.
And despite being the oldest of 10 surviving natives, Mike has no intention of slowing down his campaign to preserve the island.
The pier on the island hasn't been repaired in over 100 years. And I hope they will be able to do better than that. And to my estimation, to my belief today, is that the government did not take proper care of the islanders. And if they did, they might be there today.
We have copies of Mike Carney's memoir in our Seascapes competition this week. You can stay tuned for details. The latest newsletter is out from the Maritime Institute of Ireland, and our thanks to Pat Sweeney for the latest edition. Their website is www.mariner.ie, and congratulations to them on their museum award from the Industrial Heritage Association of Ireland. The official newsletter of the Irish Titanic Historical Society, the White Star Journal, the June edition features articles on Annie Moore, the Ellis Island girl, the Titanic centenary in stamps, the wreath-laying ceremony in Cove in April, and much more. And our thanks to editor Killian Harford. You can contact the Society on Irish Titanic Historical Society at gmail.com. Next on Seascapes to the Western Seaboard and to Inishmore, where earlier this week, Alwyn Gill saw the cruise liner The World cruising past the islands, headed for the City of the Tribes.
Last Monday, in the glorious sunshine, I sat and literally watched the world go by. The world is at 644 feet, or about 200 metres, and I strategically positioned myself and my camera to capture this luxurious floating home to 130 of the world's richest families, from 19 different countries, sail by Inishmore on its way to Galway Harbour. The ship boasts a total of 165 luxury residences, which range from studios and spacious three-room apartments to palatial six-bedroom penthouse suites. Each apartment is unique, reflecting the personality and preferences of its owner. On average, the ship accommodates just 150 to 200 residents and guests, whereas a similar-sized cruise liner would berth 1,200 guests. The World was launched in 2002, and since then its residents have been circumnavigating the Earth from the luxury of their own homes. They have visited 140 countries, calling to 800 ports. To prepare for each port of call, the enrichment programme provides onboard experts who advise residents on world cultures, local wines, restaurants and must-see attractions. Other onboard facilities include two swimming pools, an incredible spa, four restaurants, a library, shops, a market and deli, tennis, golf, and the list goes on. Unfortunately, the great ship never got close enough to the island for my lens to do it justice. But as I walked along the Glanachon, a beautiful unspoiled boreen, keeping pace with it for a while on land, I did capture some of my own wonderful world. The grey limestone pavements were already warmed by the morning sun. Its light bounced off the blue sea and made the brown seaweed shimmer. I was aware of the intoxicating fragrance of honeysuckle as I picked wild strawberries and photographed the beautiful purple flowers on huge clumps of wild thyme. The birds sang and cattle looked contentedly over the lacy stone walls that are part and parcel of all three Aran Islands. These walls are works of art, as unique and often just as intricate as the patterns of the famed Aran jumper. Whilst deciding on which of the island's lovely beaches I would swim, I couldn't help thinking that the walls and landscape of Aran are every bit as reflective of their owners as the individual apartments are of the residents of the world. And for this island resident at least, especially in such fine weather, it would be very, very difficult to change places. However, if the opportunity to arise during gales in November or January, I could possibly be more easily persuaded. Since 2009, Cornan Yillon has allocated 3.5 million to island development projects around our coast. The project are as varied as walkway developments, sporting facilities, education and training programmes, computers, websites, compressors, tourism facilities, festivals and culture and arts events. But because of the amount of funding allocated by the Department of the Environment to CORE last May, they're not currently in a position to approve any new developments. There are 40 projects already in the system. And if following a review in the autumn, any unallocated funds may be approved to some ready-to-go projects. With this in mind, CORE's Evaluation Committee are still working through the selection process. To ensure the island's survival, we can only hope that islanders' enthusiasm and energy for local development are matched by government funding. Agus anois, leis an méid sin ráite, bainigí sultas an saora agus ádach na nilain, agus go dtí go gcasfar ar a chéile ar Íosmainn, go dé sibh slán.
Alwyn Gill from Inishmore. Yesterday, the Volvo Dunlera Regatta took to the water with almost 400 craft participating, involving all the waterfront yacht clubs. And we'll have highlights from the regatta next week here on Your Maritime Programme. The patron of Clipper Ventures is Sir Robin Knox-Johnson, the distinguished sailor and yachtsman. He's the inspiration behind a member of An Garda Síochána, Conor O'Byrne, taking to the world's oceans. Conor told Seascapes about his early interest in the seashore and how he hopes to raise funds and awareness for the Irish Underwater Search and Recovery Unit, which was formed following the loss of the T. Bonhomme off Glendore last year.
I was quite lucky really, growing up in Balldoyle, very near to the coast. My father was a diver out in Howth, and everybody knows him as Jerry the Diver, and being out in Howth all the time with him as he was watching him dive, the interest in boats came along, and Dad actually got me my first ever job in Howth Harbour working on the trawlers doing engineering. So my apprenticeship started on the fishing boats in Howth back in the mid-80s. Back then Dad was interested, he sailed Galway Hookers down to France, Douarnenez, down to the festival with Johnny Hedian. So I was often on the Hookers as well, and it's just a fantastic experience. So that's where sailing came in, because it's so pleasurable, it's so relaxing and enjoyable. We have, with the Garda Sailing Club, we have a boat here in Dunleary, and we often on a Saturday morning take a short trip down to Dalkey, around the island, come back up and be different people each week. But it's amazing, it's the wildlife as well that we see along the way. The dolphins have been there, we've been lucky to see them. The seals are always there, I don't think they're ever going away. But on a good day, well, even on a bad day, in the rainy day, Dublin's still a fantastic place to look at from the sea. But the inspiration is for Robin Knox-Johnson. Many years ago, it was 5-6 years ago, I was doing my offshore sailing. So we had a large trip ahead of us. So I started reading a book, A Voyage for a Madman, just to get other people's perspectives on the sailing. And when I read about this journey of sailing around the world single-handedly and what conditions they went through, and so a couple of hundred days coming back and sailing into his home port of Falmouth, must be remarkable. And just reading the stories about him, and then following up when I go off the boat after my yacht masters, following up with Sir Robin, and just how remarkable it is. Even in the 60s he went around the world again. Clipper is amazing because Clipper takes all walks of life. I'm a guard myself, and there's bakers, there's taxi drivers, plenty of IT consultants, and these people have never been on the boat before until they step on board for their level one training, which is a requirement. We have to do 3 weeks of training, level 1, 2 and 3, before we can go away on our passage around the world. In total, there's 650 crew taking part in this race, and hopefully we will be stopping up in Northern Ireland at some stage. There is talks, I believe, in progress, hopefully going back into Derry, because anyone I've spoken to in the last race have said Derry was phenomenal. They love Derry, and they just have this, the Derry people went out of the way to make them very welcome. They enjoy the pint of porter, and they just really had a great time up there. Chief Superintendent Leahy, I went down and met him one day and I explained to him that I wanted to take a year out, but my main reason is for doing it for charity, for the Irish Underwater Search Recovery Unit. I'm part of the unit, Dad's on the committee for the unit, they're a new unit, and we're just trying to get them publicised so people know about them and what they do. Regards to friends and family, my partner, she wasn't overly keen, but she knows that it's something I need to do, and she's given me the okay to go away, but she will meet me in various ports around the world, hopefully. And parents, as I say, my dad is delighted that I'm taking his charity, their charity, on board, and hope publicise them and get the recognition and hopefully the support they can get as well. The Irish Underwater Search Recovery Unit started early last year when the tip Bonaim sank off Cork. They were looking for a number of experienced divers. Now, these group of divers have been with various organisations themselves, but they knew each other individually, but never as a collective group. So last year, they went down to Cork and they spent 4 weekends diving, helping in the search and recovery of the fishermen lost. And afterwards, they sat down and decided that they're very competent, they're very experienced, and they thought they'll get together with the will to go out and bring loved ones home to the families, because that's the whole ethos of the whole charity, is to bring loved ones home, because then that's when families can get closure. So we work off voluntary contributions at the moment. We do not have any full-time staff or part-time staff. We run the administration, the fundraising ourselves as divers and shore helpers. I would say the Panama Canal is going to be something that's going to be amazing. And I've spoken to a number of people and it's just different. I suppose with the 12 boats going up the canal together, it's going to be something different. Unfortunately, we can't race there. So, no, I say the Panama Canal, but it's the oceans. It's about the sailing for me. You're going to see plenty of sights, but it is about the sailing and the extremes of sailing that we're going to experience along the way. We're very lucky. Clipper Ventures run the Clipper Race. They've been doing it for a number of years. I think it's 1996 they had the first race. This year it's brand new, 12 brand new 70-foot yachts. They've been built in China to a very high standard. And speaking to Sir Robin when I'm on my training session, safety is a big thing. Safety is absolutely paramount for all the crew to go around 40,000 miles and have an enjoyable but safe time. The Volvos are very slightly different, whereas professional sailors, and they have a lot of money behind them. The Clipper amateur crew, very good company. It's about getting crews around the world safely. So Robin says himself, he can take people around the world half the price it would cost to climb up Everest. And it's believed that more people have climbed Everest than will have sailed around the world. So this is a unique opportunity. It's an adventure for me, and it is the experience. And as you know, as being a seaman yourself, you don't know what one day is going to throw up after the next. You know, you could be becalmed and nice and quiet in a lovely sunny day, and then a squall will come from nowhere and just hit you. So it's about being prepared and ready and anticipating all the weather conditions and sailing safely. The Asgard, I suppose, being the bad old man and working in Howth, it's something that we've all learned about, is the Asgard, and it's lovely to see it now restored to the way it is now. It is, of course, about the Asgard too. I was actually sailing not too far, about 100 miles away, when it actually sank. And unfortunately, there's been no ship to replace, to give kids from various backgrounds to learn about the sea, to get involved, and maybe take a career in it. We have the sea on our doorstep. We need to really push it. We need to get more people involved. We need to get the kids, I'd love as a guard, get kids from inner city Dublin, get them out in the boat, show them what it's all about, and let them have a great time. The tall ships, I think, last year coming to Dublin was huge for kids to take an interest in sailing and see these magnificent ships around the world. But unfortunately, we don't have a ship that we can call our own to go to different ports and say, hey, we're from Ireland, this is what we can provide. We need to get a good sail training plan back up again to get the younger kids. There's a lot of dinghy sailing here in Dunleary and also in Howth, but we need to get the traditional sailing, like the Galway hookers, get them back and get kids involved. We need a foundation or something to get children involved into sailing, and maybe someday follow my steps and sail around the world in either a Clipper or a Volvo.
We'll be following Connor's voyage with Clipper Ventures across the world's oceans, and we wish him well. Returning to our island theme, we head to the northwest corner of our island next on Seascapes, and Kieran Devaney brings us an historic meeting of two island kings.
Donegal Bay Coast Guard Radio, Donegal Bay Coast Guard Radio, Sea Star on Channel 2. Just for your information, we're heading for Coney Island, 12 POB and a very special passenger on board. Over.
13 POB, was it over?
Copy that, over.
Oh, copy, thank you.
From an island to an island, yes. Every island has its own beauty and its own history.
I sit down and sail into Coney Island off the Sligo coast for an historic first meeting. A meeting with John McGowan, the King of Coney Island.
when we meet and talk to one another, there could be a kind of a slight earthquake, because we are two powerful kings on the island, on Ireland. We are the only two that's left on the on Ireland.
How are you, sir?
Not too bad.
This is a nice wee pier, eh? Seems to be a lovely wee island.
Up from the pier, John McGowan was waiting to greet his fellow royal outside the island's tiny pub.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Welcome. This is the king of Coney Island, John McGowan, and the king of Tory Island.
Very welcome to Coney Island.
How are you?
Very pleased to meet you.
Yeah, my goodness. Is there not a slight earthquake happening?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I heard a lot about you, but I didn't expect to meet you in person. Yeah.
Well, we're here now today, both of us. And
it's great.
That's wonderful. And
it's great to see you.
Inside the crowded bar, there was time for the two kings to talk about old times and wonder what the future might hold for their lonely island kingdoms.
Ask me, John, what population of the Tory Island, roughly 100 and coming up to 140, and I call it a unique year this year for my island, Tory Island, and its community, with five new babies.
Yeah.
And two families moved to the island last year.
And I suppose you're a big tourist attraction.
Yes, we would love, John, to be more of a bigger attraction to tourists. We would love to get to double the number from roughly the end of April to the end of September. Roughly.
Oh, well, as time goes on, I would think that could improve tourist wives as well, because the islands seem to be becoming more attractive again. I notice people want to get away from the mainland and get onto a place like this that's quiet and different.
Yeah.
And of course, as you know yourself, there's only one family that was left here on this island. It's gone down to that from about, when I was growing up, there were about 40 people living here. And but they were mainly older. You know, as they passed on, there was nobody to replace them. So it has gone down to this now. It's mainly people from the mainland that they're moving in here now just for they have holiday homes.
But we have difficulties as well.
Have you air service? Have you helicopter service?
Yes, we have during the winter time.
And then when the fishing boats were sailing home and the two kings had said their farewells, the islanders and the visitors sang Coney Island's own anthem. Time for Patsy Down to return to the Irish mainland and the long journey back to his own island nation out in the wild Atlantic Ocean. The first meeting of the last two kings of the islands was over, but maybe it won't be the last.
Yes, well, I'm going to invite them to my island of Tory Island, and I will set up a big ceilidh for him on Tory Island. A weekend or a night on Tory that he'll never forget.
Kieran Devaney with the Kings of Tory and Coney Island, with special thanks to Trevor Sweeney for his assistance. Next here on Seascapes, to our competition for copies of From the Great Blasket to America, the last memoir of an islander by Michael Carney with Gerald Hayes. The question we have for you is, where in Massachusetts did Michael Carney settle? Here's a clue. You'll find this in The Simpsons. Answers on a postcard to Seascapes, RTE Radio 1, Father Matthew Street in Cork, or by email to seascapes@rte.ie. In Sligo on Friday next, four members of the Kavanagh clan from Canada will return and visit their old homestead. Their ancestors left 166 years ago when they sailed to Canada as assisted emigrants from Lord Palmerston's Sligo estates. Those returning are Frances Kilbride, her daughters Joan and Rosemarie, and her son-in-law Terry Stanley, fourth and fifth generation descendants of Patrick and Sarah Caveney from Cross, Keish, County Sligo, their famine emigrant ancestors. For years, these visitors, together with many of their cousins in Canada, actively sought to trace their Sligo roots, but in vain. All searches failed because in April 1847, when their ancestors survived a shipwreck and landed in Canada, they were given the name Kavne rather than Kavney. That's K-A-V-E-N-E-Y, their name in Ireland and the one used in shipping records. Work by Mullock Moore and Cliffany Historical Society revealed the family's identity, and to welcome them home has recorded their story as part of an exhibition which will be held in Mullock Moore from the 12th of July to the 4th of August. This story of Sligo's famine diaspora is told in the exhibition, which takes place in the old schoolhouse, with a closely linked exhibition of Mullock Moore Harbour since 1822, taking place in the adjoining Star of the Sea Centre. Patrick and Sarah Kavney, with six children, left Crofts in 1847 and sailed to Canada on the Carricks. They departed Sligo Port among 173 passengers on the 4th of April, and 3 weeks later were in sight of the Canadian coast. There, the Carricks ran aground at the Cap de Rosier in a storm, and most passengers drowned in the freezing waters. Patrick and Sarah, with their son Martin, survived the sinking. All five of their daughters were drowned. In angling, the big news in the past 2 weeks is that rod and tackle maker Hardy & Gray's have been sold to a US rival. The company, with a royal warrant which is 140 years old and based in Northumberland, has been purchased by Pure Fishing of Columbia in South Carolina, with a deal negotiated by Grant Thornton. This acquisition follows on the recent sale last month of the pool-based yacht maker Sunseeker to a Chinese company. Globalisation, how are you? Next week here on Seascapes, we'll have a full report and highlights from the Volvo Dunlera Regatta. We'll be talking to Ian Roberts about the Mirror World Championships, which are taking place at the end of this month in Lough Derg Yacht Club on our magnificent inland waterways in Dromoneer. We'll have the winners of those copies of From the Great Blasket to America. All that and much more here on Seascapes. Until next Friday night, tight lines and fair sailing.